regular session of the Borough Mayor and Council for Monday, January 12, 2015. As is our usual tradition, I'd like to invite everyone to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Our normal custom, the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for first the regular session on December 22nd.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Councilmember Goyes as the minutes as proposed or as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Let the record show that. Hopefully you won't have to leave.
Just saying.
Pump alarm.
I'll make the motion, Mayor, to approve the executive session for December 22nd.
We have a motion to approve the executive session for December 22nd. All in favor say aye. Okay, and again, the vote is 4-0. Let the record show that Councilmember Greenham is absent.
And I abstained from part one.
Okay, part one of the executive session.
Right.
So, in that case, it's 3-0. Okay. The reason for the closure were actually three different areas under the state statutory authority to close executive sessions. First was the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, discipline, demotion, compensation, removal, resignation, or performance evaluation. Appointees, employees, or officials over whom the town has jurisdiction. Second was to consider the acquisition of real property for public purpose and matters directly related thereto. And third, to consult with counsel to obtain legal advice on a legal matter. Next, we're very happy to have Michael Franklin, the president and CEO of Atlantic General Hospital. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
I'm going to be showing behind you.
Okay.
Since I won't be here beside you.
No problem.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's not a problem at all.
We got fancy this year. I mean, you all have brochures that are available to you up there. These brochures are summarized. What I'm going to give you a little more detail on and are what we're going to be having in the community when we go to communities and talk about what our strategic plan is for the future. This year is going to be a little different than what's been in the past years, where we've talked about just our past year's performance. We're going to be talking more about our new strategic plan that we've adopted and our Board of Trustees adopted for 2016 through 2020. And that's going to be focused on, obviously, the changes that are happening with healthcare reform, what that's going to mean for Atlantic General Hospital, and what that's going to mean in our community. Excuse me for a second while I make sure. So essentially, we're working, of course, on working toward our vision and achieving our mission on a daily basis. And the key parts of our mission and the vision for Atlantic General Hospital are being the leader in caring for people, being key, and also advancing the health for the folks in this community. And how do we do that? And it's our new charge going forward. And we've been living under this vision and this mission for about the last 4 years. the change in the mission that's really a challenge for us and that's going to be the key part going forward is creating this coordinated care delivery system, not just focusing on what we do, but how does what we do affect what others do, and how do we begin to coordinate care not just in the hospital but throughout the community and outside of our hospital. And a lot of that extends from where we've been in the past 5 years. Our strategic plan over the last 5 years was looking at information that the American Hospital Association was putting out to hospitals, working with the new Affordable Care Act, and how are we going to have to transition to what that's going to mean when these laws go into effect. They went into effect, obviously, in 2014. So how is that going to change what hospitals are going to be in the future? So what are the things that we need to do and all hospitals need to do? What do we need to look like as a hospital? What do we need to do differently than what we've done before? And then they also provided a tool for us to do a self-assessment on how prepared we were for this new environment. And some of the things that emerged from that we've talked about here before, the patient-centered medical home, and how do we deal with people with chronic illnesses and people who are at high risk for coming to the hospital, to the emergency room, as inpatients on multiple occasions because they have congestive heart failure or they have other conditions that get out of control that cause them to come here. How can we figure out how to take care of them at home and get the resources into the home and use technology and other people through care coordination to make that happen? Other things we've been focused on that you may or may not have heard about have been dealing with health literacy and how do we create better consumers of healthcare services in the future. We focused on one of our large efforts that we began a little over a year ago, and last year was our experimental year, if you were, our developmental year, in creating health literacy curriculum that was integrated with the regular curriculum in our elementary public schools. So we worked in the second grade class at Ocean City Elementary School to develop this curriculum, and then this year the elementary schools throughout Worcester County are developing those beyond the second grade and into the other grade level so that health literacy is part of what happens in the curriculum, and it's not just health class or a physical education class that we've all experienced. In addition to trying to get our kids to become better consumers of healthcare, we've also worked with adults and reaching out through our churches. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been creating this faith-based medical home partnership, which is developed around how do we create better health in the community, but engaging those places where people go and where people spend time, where people have a high level of trust. So we've been working with the church leaders to help bring this information. Through our patient-centered medical home, we had a grant that we were able to put computers in a number of the churches for the parishioners to be able to access online information or for them to be able to use for their health records through the patient portal that we've developed. And we were fortunate enough that with the
I started from us thinking about our problem from a healthcare provider standpoint is the fact that consumers of healthcare do not have a grasp of what they're consuming. Globally, 29% of the people are obese or overweight. So how do we create better consumers in healthcare and start that at a younger age?
If we can teach children now what it means to have literacy in their food choices as a community, we won't have to take care of them in the future in terms of social needs, from medical issues.
The local hospital reached out to Worcester County Public Schools and the Herschel S. Horowitz Center for Health Literacy at the University of Maryland School of Public Health to introduce a pilot program of health literacy lessons to second graders at Ocean City Elementary School.
Health literacy is the ability to understand and use health information to make healthy decisions. There is almost no research on health literacy in children. Because of the challenges that the developmental stages of childhood impact the ability to measure something. So with the hospital, which was the healthcare expert, the school system, which was the curriculum expert, and the center, which was the research and health literacy expert, we worked with teachers to develop lesson plans that they could use in their classrooms to build health literacy skills.
And it asked you two questions about it.
They didn't know a lot about health literacy. So the first piece of the project was really educating them on health education versus health literacy and the difference between them. Then they decided to take a look at their existing curriculum. So what reading program or what books are they currently using? What science concepts are they currently addressing? From there, they took a look at those things they're already currently using in their classroom and then paired them with the 5 health literacy standards that were developed by the Center for Health Literacy at the University of Maryland. And each lesson plan addresses one of the wellness goals. One's on safety, one's on physical activity, one's on nutrition, one is on communicating with doctors and nurses. So it addresses those overall health objectives while also addressing skill sets that the students need to understand health information better. The second lesson that we taught to them was about a trip to the emergency room. What would happen if they actually had to visit the emergency room? And with the help of Atlantic General Hospital, the nurses came to our classroom and shared an actual scenario.
So when you come to the emergency room, what's the first thing we need to know?
And the last unit was on the media and its influence on kids' choices.
We're learning how to read food labels. We're thinking, is this a good choice or is this a bad choice?
Whether teaching health literacy in the classroom will result in healthier lifelong choices remains to be seen, as the research is still in its infancy. However, one-on-one evaluations with each second grade student look promising.
They are answering questions. They're all getting the peanut allergy question correct. And when we say, well, do you know what any of these words mean? They say sodium means salt. One child said protein means getting stronger muscles. Sugar means too much sugar is bad. So they're incorporating what they're learning in a way they weren't. So we're very optimistic about what we'll find in this data.
I think it's important, especially for younger children, because they don't know any different unless they're being taught at home. I mean, their family, their parents could be eating unhealthy, and they think it's normal because their parents are eating it.
Why is it not healthy?
Because it probably has artificial fruit flavors, or if it has real fruit, it's probably that much, and pretty much the whole bottle's filled with sugar.
Yes.
School systems are no longer just required to do reading, writing, and arithmetic. We're teaching responsibility as well. And the school board has been very proactive in looking at the whole person, creating responsibility as young adults so that we can make positive influences in our lives later on.
We've got to get down to really where the next generations come from, and we've got to plant seeds in that soil. Sorry, that jumped my intro a little bit. There's a little more space in there for me to intro that, but it was queued up a little faster. Anyway, getting back to where we were. But the Association of Public School Superintendents came in. They heard about our program, and they wanted this is a national video that they've put out there to demonstrate what we've been doing in our community to try and change the healthiness and, again, create a healthier society for the future and create better consumers of healthcare resources in the future so we can cut down on costs. And that's really the big drive going forward for us, because if you look at this is a summary of what the state is requiring of us as healthcare organizations and hospitals in the state. Our job is to reduce the amount of potentially avoidable utilization in our communities. How do we keep people from having to use the emergency room when there are better choices than the emergency room for them to use? How can we take care of people in their homes as opposed to people when it's not necessarily necessary? There are, of course, reasons that you can't avoid, but for those where you can't avoid it, can you keep them out of institutions? And so all that potentially avoidable utilization is what the state is looking at to drive down healthcare costs. So looking at our next strategic plan, again, we sought direction from the American Hospital Association, and you can see that their direction was in many directions. Knowing that we all need to get to a certain point, but not really knowing how we're all going to get there, it's going to be different for all of us. From the Maryland Hospital Association, it's kind of similar. It's going to be a winding path to getting toward healthy communities and working toward being more patient-centered in the care delivery. So we looked at what was in best literature, which is somewhat, a lot of this is relatively new as we're going through this new, this healthcare revolution and this, and what's happening with the Affordable Care Act. And some of the things that we know that's going to need to happen is that we're going to have to get closer to the patients. We're going to have to create more access to primary care, more access to community-based care, so people can get health care when they need it, as opposed to, you know, I don't feel well today, I call my doctor's office, I can get an appointment next month, but that doesn't make me feel any better this afternoon, I'm going to go to the emergency room. We've got to change the way healthcare is delivered, and we've got to change the access to healthcare. And that's a real challenge in a rural community. Up in the northern end of the county, we're fairly populated, but you get outside of the northern end of the county where it's more rural, that makes it a lot more difficult to place resources where people need them. And we need to place the right kind of resources and look at how we're distributing services like with, through the patient-centered medical home. How do we deal with people at home? How do we integrate better with rehab facilities, long-term care facilities as a hospital? How do we integrate with pharmacies? As you may or may not know, part of our strategic plan in getting to this point was having a pharmacy inside the hospital so that patients who are admitted to the hospital, we can deliver their medications to them that they need to take home before they're discharged so they have them. Because research showed that only about 60% of the people would stop and pick up their prescriptions, so they would end up back in the hospital. So we've got to figure out how to do all these things that help people get the health care and do the right things that they need. And as I said, particularly in rural communities, we've got to figure out how to engage technology. How do we deal with a community that 25% of our population is over the age of 65 in this region? A lot of those folks become immobile due to just their age or due to their chronic health conditions. It's more of a risk for them to get out to go to the doctor or to go obtain medical help than for us to possibly figure out how to get into their homes. So how do we engage technology using telemedicine, using nurses to provide care in the homes and get back toward house calls and making sure people are healthy and not having to show up in our hospital via ambulance than it is to for us to invest in using technology and use new types of devices to make sure people are staying healthy in their homes. So all this wrapped together leads us to where we're looking to go in our strategic plan, which is basically creating a system of coordinated quality care at the center of that system. And for us to work on integrating all the care delivery systems throughout our community, meaning using community health and education, health departments, looking at how we distribute convenient same-day care and work on our physician offices to make care more available. Look at behavioral health. Behavioral health is a huge issue throughout the state of Maryland. It's a huge issue in our region. We're very underserved, and we do have a high proportion of mental health issues and addictions issues in our region that we need to deal with. Home health, rehab care, all the supportive care for post-hospital care, we need to integrate that better, and there's also a significant shortage in taking care of end-of-life issues in our region. And then how do we create the hospital, the right kind of hospital that's able to integrate all of these things? For us, it's going to take a focus on recruiting more primary care and getting primary care, as I said, distributed in the right places, using technology to make it more efficient. We need to have the right specialists. We've been fortunate in the past couple of years to getting adding to the specialists in this community, bringing in urology and dermatology and other key specialists so that we're doing better than a lot of communities and having those available. How do we keep focusing in that way and also using the patient-centered medical home to make sure that we're getting to those who are at the highest risk folks and making sure we're taking care of them. And for us, where we're going to be specifically focusing are on those right areas that you see up there. How do we provide the right care, using the right people, having it in the right place, where people can access it, engaging the right partners, and being the right hospital to pull all this together so that in the end, this is what our community is about. Our community is about being outdoors, being vibrant, being healthy, and people coming here and enjoying the resort. So what you'll hear from us and see from us in the future is about this 2020 vision, about the resources we're going to need to make this happen. And you'll see us working a lot with other organizations in this region to make this type of care happen. So that was a very quick fly through of what we spent our last year doing and developing. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about this or anything going on at the hospital.
Now, first of all, I think we've said this before, hopefully, we have every year, how much we appreciate and admire the excellent reputation and the closeness of the Atlanta General Hospital to our, not only the town of Berlin, but our greater community. And it's obviously the health benefits, it's just phenomenal, because when I graduated from college in 71, came back here, there was no doctor. There just was no doctor in the town of Berlin. Or, in fact, I guess we had one, and then he passed away. He passed away shortly after. So, you know, it's just hard to imagine that in those days you had to go to either Salisbury or Ocean City just for anything related to healthcare. And now I think, we feel extremely blessed and extremely fortunate. And I like the fact that AGH, at least in the time that I've been trying to pay attention, is always on the cutting edge of change. And healthcare, along with education, law enforcement, and so many aspects of society, is going to a revolution. I think that was the key word. And
right.
I'm very pleased to know that you all not only are very aware of it, but are doing everything possible to be part of it. And we just want to very much say to pass on to the board of directors and everyone what an asset Atlantic General Hospital is, certainly to the health of the community and the economic health of our community, because many people in this area would not be able to live here if it were not for the employment opportunities as well. So there's kind of two kinds of health there. The other is, I did happen by pure accident to know that you had a pharmacy in the hospital. And about 3 days before Christmas, I ran out of one of my prescriptions for my type 2 diabetes. And I called up my primary care physician, and he was out of the country visiting relatives. And then they referred me to his backup, and he was out of the country visiting relatives. So the nurse was very nice. She says, go to your Atlantic General Hospital, and you'll go through the emergency room and show them your prescription needs to be refilled. And it was it was amazing. I got it all squared away and still got to work on time. It is something that, again, this idea of integrating services. Life's just not, I don't know anybody I know very few people who have a predictable day anymore.
Right.
And even if they don't have a healthcare emergency, if there's some sort of healthcare emergency of their own or of a loved one or of a coworker, and oh my gosh, things can go from chaotic to literally crazy in a heartbeat. So all these things sound very, very positive. We want you to know that we want to be a part. Supporting these new initiatives. I don't think healthcare reform has finished. I think it's only at the very beginning of the beginning, and hopefully in someone's lifetime we'll get it squared away. But the other aspect is that we very much think that this is something where we want to promote, as you mentioned, recreation. And an environment in our community and an expectation in our community that life is to be fun and active and always and as good a health as you can control. And we're very much going to be continuing to promote hiking and biking trails and all kinds of other recreation for all ages.
Skateboard parks, right?
yes. We're going to make it mandatory that everyone in Berlin be able to skateboard and a few other things. But ultimately, we also are looking forward. I think you were the one that made the original suggestion, and if you didn't, you get the credit. We are very much excited about working together with AGH for the first ever AGH health fair. I know you had some in Delaware and other places, but Berlin is going to be very proud to host a health fair, and our goal is to pull it together and get something started this year and then just keep building on.
Thank you. And we appreciate the support that we've received from you all over the years also making this happen.
Dr. Frank, I just want to say that my daughter's in healthcare. My daughter-in-law is in healthcare. My husband is chronically ill. We spend about 2-3 times a year at AGH. And I'm a multitasker, so I'm in that hospital with him. And, you know, I listen to my daughter and daughter-in-law talk about their hospital issues with staff. And I just want you to say that the last time we were there, about less than a month ago, I could just tell the staff is very happy. You know, you can feel the vibe in the building. And I was also there. It was so nice when we checked out to have his medicine there. I didn't have to take him home, run to the drugstore. You know, this is a very aging community. We have a lot of seniors, and I think that's very important that they don't have to worry about getting their medicine, that they have it as they check out. That is a great, great convenience. Sometimes it's late at night, weekends, holidays, whatever. But and the idea, I also have a grandchild living with me, and I've been watching her looking at box tops, you know, so this is getting out through the community now. I think it's very, very important because, was it Dr. Ben Carson said that one of the most important thing for elected officials is the health of their constituents and their communities, because without a healthy community, that's all a drain on everyone. It's a drain on our health care. It's a drain on, you know, families providing care and doctors, you know, and I agree with that, that, you know, we need a healthy community, and it's wonderful having you here and not having to go to Salisbury all the time. And all the doctors now are here, which is, you know, a big deal. It's very helpful. And
yes.
I know that we've all supported you, and we support your vision here, too.
Thank you.
Any questions for us? Or?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
We appreciate your time and preparation. And again, look forward to working with you on the health fair and lots more, lots of other things.
Thank you. Make this complex.
Yeah.
That's right.
I only take it apart. I don't put it together.
We can move.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. Next on our agenda is a presentation from Debbie Darden from the Aztec National Seashore. Hello.
Thank you.
Come on up.
And I'm loaded. I have handouts.
Oh, awesome.
I'm not a PowerPoint, so.
Awesome. That's fine.
Anyway.
The sky's been awesome lately. It's been cool, you know, clear, mm-hmm. lots of stars.
It's been really great.
Yes.
And thank you all so much for letting me come and talk to you as a relatively new superintendent of Assateague Island National Seashore, mm-hmm. and also as a relatively new resident of Berlin. So we're just delighted to have ended up here. We love Berlin. It's a great community, and my husband and I have really enjoyed our time here so far. I'm here to talk to you a little bit today about a potential fee increase at Assateague Island National Seashore. And it's very important to us that we keep the fees affordable and the 2.2 million people who come to visit us every year in Maryland and Virginia coming and happy. Those 2.2 million people make about $86 million worth of economic development here in the two communities, Berlin and Chincoteague, and provide more than 1,000 jobs, 1,087 jobs the last time we looked at it. So I know it's an important economic generator for the community, and keeping the fees affordable both for visitors who come but also for our local residents is really crucial. This is a Park Service-wide proposal. The National Park has about 404 national parks in the system. About 131 of them charge fees. And fees are charged based on what group you're in. So group one are little historic sites like Edgar Allan Poe in Philadelphia. Group four are really big national parks like Yellowstone and Yosemite and Grand Canyon. Assateague Island National Seashore and the other seashores fall in group two with the national lakeshores and the national rivers and other similar parks. And the recommendation is for an annual pass to go from $30 to $40, for a car worth of full of people who comes for a week to go from $15 to $20. A motorcycle would go from $10 to $15 also for a week. At the same time, we would also be increasing camping fees to get them more up to what they are in the local community, and the camping fees would go up about $5 a night, from $25 to $30 a night for someone during the season, for example. And this level of fee increase was determined by the National Park Service's National Leadership Council in Washington. And they looked at parks all across the system and tried to come up with a rate that was fair so that, you know, they would like it to be so that if you go to a national seashore anywhere in the country, it's the same rate. It doesn't have to be, and that's why we're coming to talk to you all to see if it makes sense for it to be here, what it is in other places. But they did try to look at a rate that would be fair when you were going to a national seashore, whether it's in here or Virginia or in North Carolina or in New York or Texas or California. So they're trying to come up with a rate that would be fair no matter where you were going. The fees at Assateague have not increased since 2007. And at the time in 2007, we implemented it in 2007, but it was mostly we saw the increase in 2008. And a question I know, Laura, that you and Mayor Williams had asked was, what did that do to visitation? And in 2008, that year, we did see a decrease in visitation by about 100,000 people. And the thing is, though, that's the same year the economy tanked. So we don't know whether it was a result of the fee increase or the economy or both.
Or a combination.
Yeah, something, yeah. But in 2009, it came back up, and it stayed at its historic level since then. So since 2009... we've been back up to that 2.1 to 2.2 million visitors a year. And of those, about a million come to the Maryland side, and about 1.1 to 1.2 go to Chincoteague. So about a million people up here in Maryland. The Park Service did do some surveys, and according to the surveys, less than 7% of visitors and non-visitors and local community members say that the amount of the fee makes a huge difference to them making a decision whether or not to come to the park. So they don't believe that this is going to really have a large impact on visitation. A thing that's important for us is to remember that most of our local community people buy the pass. And so for $40, you can come to Assateague every single day if you want to all year long. And that $40 is, you know, less than a family of four pays these days to go to a movie. So it's a fairly good deal.
Is that per person, $40?
It's for your car. If one person in a car has a pass, then everybody in the car gets in. So if you're a family, you just buy one pass, and you can go with your family and bring your friends, your kids' friends, or whoever with you. A lot of people, there are other ways for people to get into the park. If you're under 16, it's free. If you're over 62, you can get a $10 pass that will get you into any national park anywhere. If you're handicapped, you get in free. Certain members of the military who have military passes get in free. And we do try to have at least 10, if not more, fee-free days a year where people can come, and everybody comes for no fee. So we do those things to try to make it affordable for people to be sure that our local community members can have an opportunity to come in and see us. And the last thing I really wanted to mention was that 80% of the fees we collect actually stay here at Assateague. And that a lot of what you see in the summer at the park is paid for through these fees. So the lifeguards, for example, are paid for through the fees. A lot of the bathroom cleaning, the care that happens at the campgrounds, are paid for through the fees. And that 80% of fee money has to be spent only on things that directly impact the visitor's experience. And they're very serious about that. We try to convince them that things should be paid for with fee, and they say, no, it's not a direct enough impact on the visitors. So it doesn't get spent on administration. It doesn't get spent on administrative buildings. It doesn't get spent on anything behind the scenes. That fee money gets spent, all of it, on things that directly impact and improve the visitor's experience. And that's part of what the director and the National Leadership Council were trying to do with this fee increase at this time, because you all had, everybody knows what's happening with the federal budget. And we want to be sure that we keep the experience a good, positive, great experience for people. And, you know, our purchasing power is going down. We're seeing our budgets go down and down and down. And in order to keep that visitor experience at the high level and keep the economic impact of the visitation where it's been, our national leadership feels like this fee increase is really crucial to keeping things the way we want to keep in our national park.
Is the per vehicle pass, is that increasing as well?
Yes, that would go from $15 to $20, but that's a week. So
a week, not talking about the year annual pass.
Oh, it goes from 30 to 40.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
So,
are you planning on increasing the senior pass? I think you said it's $10.
No, that's my understanding is that's going to still remain $10, and the Golden Eagle passes and those other passes are still going to, because those are bigger than the Park Service. They're for all federal land, so those would stay the same.
How about the URV?
Those fees are not going to go up, so those are going to stay where they are. And that's under a different system, so it's not impacted by this nationwide increase. That's something we determine here locally. And so we have a public comment period that's open now. We haven't gotten a lot of comment. We've gotten fewer than 20 emails or letters about it, and 40 or 50 people have commented on our Facebook page. Most people are not too crazy about a fee increase. The groups we've worked with, like AMSA and other groups, have suggested that maybe we should wait until after this summer to implement it. And that's the kind of thing, if you all have that kind of suggestion, that's the kind of recommendation that we can make to our Washington office.
Troy is in the hotel business. I used to have a store on the way to Assateague. It's the third highest traveled road in the state of Maryland in the summer behind 50 and 13. And it looks to me like your camping fees are going in line with the tents in Frontier Town, Eagles, like, you know, Nest and all that. So, you know, I don't think $5 or $10 is going to keep people from taking a vacation if you haven't increased in 8 years.
Yeah, that's what we hope. And I should have mentioned that the camping fees, one of the things we try to do is not undercut the local community. And so we went out and did a market study to be sure that our fees were comparable with what else was out in the community, because we don't want to undercut the private sector.
And you have the primitive sites, right?
We have primitive.
We have just cold water and electric.
Right, cold water showers, that's right. So, yeah, you have to go over to the state park where they have the lovely hot water showers.
That's not camping.
Yeah.
It's still a good deal for the fees.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good.
And 8 years since it increased.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and I do believe the economy is what hurt you that year, because we saw that. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it wasn't a sector of the economy that wasn't impacted at all. I mean, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the same, based on the Assateague National Seashore being here for over 50 years.
50 years this year, actually.
That's
yes,
great.
It's 50 years on September the 19th. Yes.
Excellent. And I hope you're going to play that up.
We are. We're going to have a birthday party.
Excellent. And just like say, I would encourage you to work with our economic
Ms. Ivy.
Director,
Greg.
Ivy, because we have our welcome center.
Mm-hmm.
So we tended to call it visitor center, but one of the suggestions has been made that we call it a welcome center because we welcome local groups as well as out of town guests.
Absolutely.
And so we'd be glad to help you promote that.
But that would be wonderful. And we'll call you maybe.
And the other thing too is that, based on at least past history, I think one thing we have in common is that we raise fees or anything of any cost as a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like try everything else. But there is, unfortunately, inflation is real. It surprised me how much inflation has continued to during this so-called recession.
Yeah.
And the inflation recovered pretty quickly, faster than everything else. But in any case, that's beyond our control. But just speaking as an individual, the fees seem very reasonable. Mm-hmm. The increases. Again, if it was something you were doing on an annual basis, then I'd start to become concerned.
Right.
But at the same time, we want people choosing quality over quantity when they're coming to this area.
Yes.
We do not want to be a city, but we want to be able to literally play host to hundreds of thousands of people in northern Western County over the course of the year, without changing the entire nature and ambiance and feelings of safety and security. And I think that's where we try to work in harmony. And we don't want to become exclusive ever, but we do want to make sure that we're providing quality services for our guests and for our local folks. Proposed fees certainly seem to align with everything else that's going on in the area.
Great.
That's my impression of speaking.
I have one question. Did you say that they're trying to make this more standardized so that if I go to a national park, if I go to another park, the fee will just pretty well be about the same? Or
if it's in our group, they would like yeah, all national seashores to have the same rates and all of the big national parks to have the same rates. So that's part of what they're trying to do with this increase.
And you're extending your season too, which should be helpful to you.
Mm-hmm. I think that'll make a big difference if we can.
November 15th, I mean, it's still beautiful. It's best part of the year down here in fall.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any questions for Debbie?
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right, and thank you for letting me come.
Welcome to Berlin.
Oh, thank you. We love it.
Let us know if we can be of any service.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Next on their agenda item number 4 is a request for a special Sunday permit for Duncan Shaw American Legion Post 231 for what I see here is a Super Bowl Day activity on February 1st. Anyone wish to make a motion?
This is pretty much the same request as last year.
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Burrell to approve the special Sunday permit for Duncan Child, American Legion Post 231. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. The motion passes 4-0. Next is a public hearing for the rezoning recommendation of the Planning Commission. Come forward, whoever's involved.
Good evening.
Sure.
We got a stranger in here.
How many clients are you representing?
Just one. Probably half of Ocean City.
Thank you.
I don't have glasses on.
That's it. Let me have those renderings.
And also support Lady General Hospital.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thanks. Good. I think Mr. Coffey, you're about to make your presentation. Is that what you'd like to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So, for the record, Mark Cropper, 6200 Coastal Highway, Suite 200, Ocean City, Maryland. I'm the attorney. The attorney for the property owners, which are the subject of this request for rezoning, the property owners being Philip Hout, seated to my right, his wife Marie Hout, trading as P&M Partnership. The request is to have the council approve a change of zoning classification for two properties. They're identified as Tax Map 25, parcels 460 and 145, which are located on what I will describe as the northwest corner of the intersection of Maryland 818 and Route 50. And I'm going to give you,
as we commonly call it here in Berlin, the old McDonald.
Yeah.
right next to it.
That would be correct.
Right. Right.
And for the record, I refer to this document as applicant's exhibit number one, since I need to note a record. And if you will, after you've handed that on, if you'll look on the rendering, up at the top, the word site is in light gray. That is the area which is the subject of the request. Next, and Mr. Howe, just for the record, you, in fact, are the property owner of the subject property. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you retained my services to represent you with regard to this matter?
That's correct.
You also retained Chris Carball of Atlantic Group, who's seated to your right, to perform certain site plan and survey work also in aid of this request.
Yes, that's correct.
Chris, if you will very briefly state your educational and professional background.
I'm a landscape architect educated at Penn State University. I'm a principal at the Atlantic Group and Associates based here in Berlin. For the past 20 years, I've provided services to clients throughout Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia.
And as such, have you been qualified as an expert in land planning before a variety of administrative and judicial bodies?
Correct.
I will be offering the testimony of Mr. Carball as an expert land planner for the purpose of this proceeding. You also provided to me, Mr. Carball, what I'm going to describe as a boundary survey of the lands of Philip and Marie Houck, Berlin, Maryland. That's an actual survey of the subject property. Is that correct?
Correct.
So the first rendering identified as applicants one was basically a large area, a map area showing the location of the property. And this is a much more detailed rendering of the subject property showing its boundaries, its dimensions, and things of that nature. Now, Mr. Houck, you and your wife have owned this property for some time. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And back in beginning in 1999, there was an effort undertaken on the part of the town of Berlin to annex this property into the town of Berlin as part of, at that time, a desired industrial park known as the Berlin Technology Campus. Is that correct?
That's correct. 1999. Yep.
All right. You provided me copies of a letter dated December 20th, 1999. Attached to that is an annexation consent agreement by which the property was annexed into the town, correct?
That's correct.
And as can be seen, that was executed, and the property, in fact, was annexed into the town. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, also part of that overall undertaking, upon annexation of the property, there was to be water and sewer extended to the property from the town of Berlin. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you have provided me with a letter dated March 20, 2000, from the Mayor and Council of Berlin to you as the property owner, describing how that process was going to be undertaken and planning for the extension of water sewer to the property.
Correct.
That would be applicants number four. Now, in order for the town of Berlin to, in fact, achieve the extension of water and sewer to the property, it had to acquire easements along 818 to extend those water and sewer utility lines to your property. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, sorry.
And you provided me with a copy of an easement dated March 8, 2000, by which you granted to the town of Berlin the necessary easements for the extension of water and sewer out to your property. Correct. Yeah,
Now, even though it was anticipated that the water and sewer would be extended back in that time frame of 1999 and 2000, in fact, it did not happen at that time, did it?
No, just recently.
Okay. And in fact, you received a letter dated June 20th, 2012, notifying you as the property owner that at that time, actually plans were being prepared, engineers had been retained to design the extension of the water and sewer, so nothing really happened between 2000 and 2012, but that was your first notification, correct?
First notification.
Subsequent to your receipt of that letter of June 20, 2012, that is applicant's number six that's already been provided to the mayor and council, there was a rendering delivered to you showing essentially the engineer planned route of how the water and sewer lines were going to be extended to the property. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Not a problem. We don't need him.
If you have any questions, just let me know. I'll be more than happy to advise the mayor and council. Now, since you've owned this property, and this is an investment property, you've had no interest from anybody wishing to develop this property in an industrial manner. Is that correct?
Not in an industrial manner.
Right, but you've had extensive requests for the development of this property in a commercial nature.
Commercial nature, right.
And you don't believe, as an owner of the property, that industrial zoning is really the appropriate zoning for this property at this time, do you?
Not at this time, but back in 2000 I was, but not now.
So. But that was only if the industrial park, the Berlin Technology Campus, came to fruition, which it did not.
Never did, right.
But since that time, through your experiences as the property owner and also being familiar with development patterns generally in this area, you consider commercial zoning to be a more appropriate zoning, especially in light of the fact that this property is located on the northwest corner, what we deem to be a major intersection of Main Street Berlin 818 and Route 50, its location is more conducive to a commercial use. Is that correct?
Correct.
And it's for that reason that you have made the request before the mayor and council, and it's also for that reason that the planning commission for the town of Berlin gave a unanimous favorable recommendation for that rezoning. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in fact, applicants number eight, because I just want to make it for the record, is the letter dated December 16, 2014, that we received from, actually it was the Christopher Denning, the chairman of the Berlin Planning Commission, confirming the unanimous favorable recommendation of the Planning Commission to change the zoning from M1A light industrial to B2.
And that is in our packet.
Okay, thank you.
That's correct.
You're saying it's bad with that.
Okay. Do you believe, as was found by the Planning Commission, that the existing zoning is a mistake? You believe that, correct?
Yes, I do.
And you also believe it was a mistake to impose that zoning back in 1999 and 2000 prior to any confirmation that the industrial park was going to come to fruition, correct?
Correct.
Had the industrial park actually occurred, you were willing to support the annexation of the property and to utilize what became the industrial zoning, but that proved not to be the correct course of action, and you now essentially want to correct that mistake, correct?
Very much. Correct.
That will be our presentation, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I appreciate your participation tonight and the presentation. I'm going to, as I always do, tell you exactly how I feel right up front. And I think I agree with the unanimous decision wholeheartedly of the Planning Commission. The world has not only changed, but it's changed a dozen times over since 1998, and particularly here in Berlin. If you had told people in 1998 that there was significant commercial commercial development potential along US 50, 113, either one. They literally laugh at
me. Right.
I mean, come on, you know. We lived through it.
Right.
And things have changed, and we're in a whole different position now. And thank goodness for it. The M1 was at least it was better than nothing.
Right.
And the technology part was at least a vision. And I think that in retrospect, thank goodness the town council, the mayor, and other officials at the time at least fortunately took a bit off the bullet and annexed and called in that this property into the town.
Well, I'm glad you did annex it, really.
I think the key is if you want to have any kind of influence and have any kind of influence on the kind of development that your town grows into, the annexation is like an initial step. And I think at that time, they made the best decision they could, but it's not 1998 anymore. And every bit of interest that I've heard informally so far is all been commercial related. I don't know, maybe someday there might be some residential interest, but that's a whole other thing. But the fact that Berlin's, I think, well positioned to take advantage of commercial development along our primary corridors, quite frankly, I would say this would be one heck of a great place to start.
Yes.
So that's my comments.
Well, you know, what I don't understand, because I travel a lot, but if you think about it, from Salisbury to Snow Hill or even Pocomoke, there's no amenities really on 113. I mean, you have to get off, go through light, you know, the Uncle Willie's or the McDonald's in Snow Hill, which is really not, you know, right on 113. And I'd love to see a small hotel come to that. I think Dr. Franklin and AGH, you know, were a destination area, but we don't have any place for our guests to stay. And I always wonder about, you know, the hospital, if they come in the summer and a family member gets ill and they have to get admitted and their week vacation's up, it's, you know, a hassle for them. There's really, other than, 10 rooms in the hotel and about 9 or 10 bed and breakfast rooms, we don't have any, you know, housing in Berlin. And that's location out there. You know, that's definitely location. And when they do the rest of the dualization on 113, that's traffic studies there, which is tremendous.
Well, we've got a couple of hotels look at it, not to interrupt anybody.
No, that's fine. That's what we hear.
But, and I see, Maureen, I see that out there, you know, done nicely, you know, restaurants, whatever, but, you know, we're becoming larger here in this area. Not everybody wants to go to Ocean City to spend the night, or, you know, they want different experiences. There's a need.
Do you have any questions?
I don't have a question before I come in. At this time, but you are going to ask for comments from the public.
Yeah,
public from the family.
Yes. Yes. But I don't mind sticking my neck out because people want me to. They want to know what I want to think.
Absolutely.
Okay. So exactly.
We're here to answer whatever questions.
Well, I think unless anybody else has any questions, we'll let it over here. Okay. Now we'll open the public hearing on the rezoning recommendation from the Berlin Planning Commission to rezone aforementioned properties owned by Mr. and Mrs. Hauck from M1, as it was designated in 1998, to B2 shopping, as recommended now by the current planning commission. Does anyone wish to address the mayor and council on this issue? Pro or con, or whatever, it's fine. Yeah. Now close the hearing, seeing no one having any comments.
Can I make a motion?
Let me just do something technical. The presentation that I made and all the documents I introduced as the applicant's exhibits were intended as part of the public hearing.
Okay.
And
because officially you just opened the public hearing.
We need to introduce
them. Well, I would like to reaffirm, reintroduce all those documents and confirm everything as being part of the public record.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that. Right. Snafus.
Right. We don't want any snafus.
All right. Well, I'd like to make a motion then.
Excuse me, if I could. The council needs to make these findings of fact in addition to the ordinance. We need to also do that verbally.
Okay.
Introduce the findings of fact and adopt the findings of fact.
So well,
absolutely.
Well, what I'm saying is, how do they become part of the record?
Verbally by motion, that's everything.
Okay. All right.
Okay, then I'd like to make a motion for tax map 25, partial 145, tax map 25, partial 460, owned by Philip and Marie Hoke and located in Route 818 Extended and U.S. Route 50, to be rezoned from M1A Industrial to B2 Shopping and to take in consideration the findings of facts that is presented today.
We have a motion by Council Member Hall to approve the rezoning recommendation of the Rowan Planning Commission to take this change this 2.3 acre lot from M1 Industrial to the B2 Shop. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And best wishes with your endeavors to develop the lot.
Okay, I'll try to make the town proud. So, thank you, Arthur.
Stay in touch.
Thank you.
You do a good job.
Thank you
for your patience.
You all got to go to Penguin Swim next year.
Yeah, challenge us.
Right there. Tom's going, he said.
There you go.
Is this
yours? No.
No, right there. Does that belong here?
Yeah, that belongs there. Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
I guess I want to make sure that we introduce the hearing correctly, and that's why we did the kind of review of everything that Mr. Cropper was presenting in the last hearing.
Right.
What is the proper procedure here with this public hearing that we want to do for this proposed ordinance that would basically its intent is to help support the Planning Commission idea to create site design guidelines. Do we need to read this line by line?
We need to read it. Dave, is there anybody from the Planning Commission here to speak to this item?
I thought there was going to be, but there isn't.
I guess that means you've got the report.
They acted on, we've been working for over a year now on commercial architectural design standards. Essentially to try and have some control over what's commonly called franchise architecture, so that it would be more in, to complement the architecture we have in town, the nature of the town architecturally. You're familiar with that. We've talked about it several times in mayor and council meetings also. The simplest way, but the first track we took was to possibly adopt Worcester County's commercial architectural design standards. They don't actually fit very well for us, the Planning Commission has determined. We will be probably borrowing some of their terminology and coming up with our own document in the future. Matter of fact, Wednesday, that's one item that we'll be undertaking. But to have that protection, basically the ordinance you see in front of you is our existing ordinance 108-274. On the back of it, item 9 is a new addition. We had subsections 1-8 existing. All we've done, I wrote a simple review. I consulted with Mr. Gaskell many times about it. Number 9, architectural design review. The Planning Commission shall, as part of its site plan review process, review and approve all proposed commercial development to ensure it complements and enhances the town's historic architectural character and uniqueness. It's a broad sword, but it gives us some protection legally. Say that, you know, we know there's a new McDonald's going to be going up out on 50. Say they wanted to punk it down on North Main Street, and we didn't like the new sleek architecture. It doesn't fit with the character of the town. This would at least give them the power to ask a developer to come back with a different design, a different drawing, a different look to the building. And that's what I saw it all along. They feel that the Worcester County guidelines don't accurately reflect Berlin. They take into account all of Worcester County, the coastal, the farm, the downtown area. Those guidelines, if you ever look at them, the downtown architecture, they have three distinct types of architecture. The downtown examples, every photograph in that section is of downtown Berlin. So that this is what we need to focus more on in our residential outlying areas for architecture. And this gives us some control. And the Planning Commission, we got to this point after, since I've been here, 16 months of debate, I've been pushing for this. And we finally got to this point where they agreed. This is the simplest path to have some control, some legal. Essentially, they were doing this function to begin with. And it just had the cooperation of anybody who was developing a property. If they asked for something, they've been getting it. But they had no legal standing to do it. They had the legal standing.
They were totally dependent on goodwill.
Right. The infrastructure, the access, the parking, they had the legal. That's in the ordinance. But they did not have it for this.
But I hope this doesn't give them the authority to nitpick some developer to death. Now, I understand the intent, and I would like to know on what standards will their determination be based?
Those standards and guidelines, that's the document that they'll have to produce. Right now, I'll use the Bank of Ocean City as an example because it's been brought up to me by the Planning Commission many times. The first iteration of that project, they asked them to make it look more like the neighborhood, more residential, and they did, and they accepted it. They've had exactly what you're saying, Mr. Burrell, is what their problem was in getting to this point. Some felt there's been some history with several different projects, I understand, where the applicants were nitpicked to death. And they did come to a consensus. They did have to vote. It'd be much like the council board. They do have to come to some agreement. But in my experience, that they can come to that. And they felt they could in the interim. They do want to develop design standards and guidelines. I think it's also their intention to come in this next budget cycle to ask for some money, to hire a consultant to help us prepare them. So I think this was a somewhat interim measure, but with the pressure we have for development right now, commercially, I think it was necessary.
And Dave, I do believe if we looked around, there is, I know I've talked to some towns, there is some money out there. I don't know if it's still there. There is grant money available to do this so that the money doesn't come necessarily out of our budget, all of it. to look at this, because, you know, I agree with Council Member Burrell, you know, we don't want to be restrictive, but it's, I don't know, I just feel like we spent so much time and so much money, staff, council here, previous councils, 30 years to bring this town where it is today. And it just disturbs me when I look around. It's like they built a beautiful building out there on Palmer Gillis's property. But then if you go by there at night, I'm looking at that beautiful building, and he's got like a bar of blue, neon light. And I'm not into the color. We can't do color. But I'm thinking, we don't want people putting neon lights all over the front of their commercial properties in Berlin, do we? You know, I mean, it's just those kinds of things. You know, the Planning Commission, they always go back to those diamond windows at the Rite Aid. Well, those diamond windows were on what was ever presented to them. They just didn't see it. You know, and it's like, I've been taking pictures. My son's going to be sending me pictures from Charlottesville, but like, some towns you travel in and you go by buildings and you don't even know it's a Rite Aid, but it's a Rite Aid because the way it's developed, you know, and it's just, I just think that we need to keep the architectural integrity of this town as a Victorian town. And, you know, I always go back to Old Ocean City Boulevard. You know, we're getting ready to do something there with the Dollar General that's going to be a huge impact on traffic, and I really think we need to pay attention there. But I look at how much money was spent on Old Ocean City Boulevard from there to the Barrett Building, and there's no rhyme or reason to any of those buildings. Some of the parking's in the front, some of it's in the back, some are two-story, some are one-story, some it's, and I just look at that and I think about all the money that was spent there, that if we'd have had some kind of commercial guideline, we kind of could have had a mini Main Street going down that road. We could have had curb, sidewalk, brick facades. You know, we could have, like, kind of built a little Main Street there. And, you know, it wouldn't have cost that much more, but it's just, it's so mismatched there. And I just don't want to continue to see that. I'd like to see it more, you know, I go back to the east and to the Royal Farm there. You know, Troy's a builder. I've done some building. I can visualize. That's a huge, huge Royal Farms. I don't know. That's probably 10, 15,000. That's a huge Royal Farms. And the way they built it and set it back and the way it's in brick and they put the little... But, I mean, that building doesn't stick out at you. It kind of blends with the area. And that's what I'd like to see in Berlin.
Right.
And, you know, the Royal Farms that they're talking about doing out there, you know, we need to have something in place, and this is a start.
Yeah.
This is a start.
It directs them, it says, shall review and approve.
And I think that's a very good point, because I think it's been their intent, and they wanted to do this for years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there was no real pressure during the height of the recession. I mean, building permits for farm view between for anything. So maybe fixing up a few sheds here. So, but I do totally agree with Council.
And it's not about cost, G, because I've noticed that, you know, the Home Depot, the Lowe's, the Dollar General, those chains, those big boxes, they'll build exactly what you tell them to. If you let them go in with a metal building and aluminum frame windows, and they'll do whatever you make them do. It's not a make or break for them building in your town. They've already done the studies. They're building there.
We've had two presentations here. I'm trying to remember the man's he's the expert in the field, and he showed again all these national chains, and he showed their basic template, and then what they've done throughout the country.
Sure.
They've got templates even for all that.
Yeah.
So you know, it's not so much. It's not a costing. I think the perspective I've gotten on from watching the county, the planning commission as a council person, and then more recently as mayor, is that I think that they know, they have a pretty good idea of what they'd like to end up with. And I think that their idea of coming to the council with a proposal to put in the budget to hire a consultant to so that they can do the process, not hopefully, again...
Do it right.
And I agree, not to make it burdensome, but basically all I think everyone's intention here is, regardless of the role, is, and I think it would be widespread in the community, would be to whatever we add to the community, doesn't have, we're not trying to recreate downtown Berlin, but we certainly want whatever we build or refurbish to complement the architectural integrity of this town, which quite frankly is what the whole revitalization of this community was built on.
Yes, now I agree wholeheartedly with what Councilmember Hall has stated, but I would like those standards because what should happen is it's not Councilmember Hall's vision or my vision or your vision. It is a vision that has been decided upon by the powers that be, and this is what we're gonna. This is what's gonna be our basis for our decisions. So that I, as a member of this commission, won't have the
veto power
to stick my personal beliefs about diamond shaped windows into this
and color
this discussion. That's all I'm saying.
Dave,
one of the most appropriate renovations in our recent years that has been downtown is what Calvin B. Taylor done to the bank. A lot of that is brand new, but you look at it, you can't tell.
That was very well done.
Yeah, very well done.
I just want to make sure procedurally that I understand this correctly. From what I understand is that this will give them some legal basis for what they've already been doing.
Right, that's right? Correct.
But in fact,
they've been operating this way for years.
So it's a temporary transitional situation. And what they'll do, and I don't have a vote, but my support for this idea comes with the understanding that they'll come to us and ask for a figure that's been researched and so forth, so that they will have budgeted for the new fiscal year coming up an amount that will allow them to have a consultant come on board, put together the standards, and then the standards will be presented to the mayor and council for approval. Is that not the way it works?
Correct, but I don't know that they'd immediately come to you as part of the budget. I was thinking that's their intention.
You tell them that's our intention if they want our support. I wrote a letter back in the fall.
Yes.
I believe that an overwhelming majority of people want to get this done.
Right.
And we're saying we're willing to support this.
Yep.
We're willing to work hard on the budget and find the money. We don't print it. But the thing is, this is not something that we're going to sit around and let it stay in this introductory phase for the next 2 or 3 years.
We want
immediate work done on real standards. We're not talking about anything draconian, but something to complement, I think meets the goals of what's been expressed tonight and what I've heard for years from many former and current planning commission members. It's just, let's get it done.
Right?
I mean, that's the message I want you to send back to. Get it done.
They already know that. At the end of last, when they passed this recommendation on, one of the items for this agenda on Wednesday night, their next meeting after this, is to continue work on the guidelines and standards. So everything you just said, they know that. They want to do some work on it themselves.
Yep,
and with the intention of saying, okay, to finish this, they may need some budget help. I wasn't telling you that definitely coming to you with a line item, but that I'm sure that's going, the way your opinion has been expressed to me, that is the way it'll probably head.
Yeah, and that's fine.
And
that's their decision.
And,
but all I'm saying is that we just want them, now that this process has seen some evidence of actual movement forward, we're delighted, we're excited, and we don't want this this beginning momentum to end until the job's done.
And in response to Ms. Hall's remarks, we are going to look into MML, Maryland Department of Planning, any source we can to help with it, even if it's just a direction to head into which consultants, similar to what we've done with the strategic planning sessions that are upcoming. You know, we got some recommendations, so we're gonna try and head that direction also.
But to reiterate what the mayor said, you know, I was sitting, you know, a lot of those planning and zoning meetings, and the vibe I got from them was like, wow, this is a lot. I don't want to do this because I don't want to put my name to this. You know, some of them are professionals, some of them are lawyers, and it kind of scares them. But what you need to carry back to them is that the mayor and the council wants to support them to continue this and get something that works for Berlin and is not too restrictive. But we need it because we're getting ready to get hit a lot of ways, and we want, you know, this is permanent stuff that can't be fixed.
Right. Is this going to be their end-all for the moment?
For the moment, yes.
To go ahead. Okay, having been on the other side of this dyad and arguing with the mayor and council 10 years ago, they said that this was going to be done at that time.
Yep.
I'm not real excited about having that particular board who can't even come up with a set of guidelines, even something on a single sheet of paper, let alone have somebody here this evening to help you dictate what I should or shouldn't put on the front of my building or colors or anything of that matter. This is too vague.
No colors. We can't talk colors.
It's too vague. It's too open. And I don't like the way that they've written it at all.
And somebody should have been here from the planning.
I just think it's too open-ended the way that they've left it here. They want to set the precipice as to what the town's going to look like for the next 10, 15 years on one sentence. I can't agree with that because I think it's going to put us at
number nine,
with either attorneys, with developers, with anybody. And it's always easy. I mean, I agree with Councilman Burrell and the direction that we need to go, but I'm sure Councilman Purnell will attest to the fact it's always easy to spend somebody else's money. And to have somebody come back three or four times, it gets expensive real quick. Real, real quick. They should have had something more than this for this evening.
But Mark Cropper would tear this number nine up.
I just don't care for it.
I think in defense of it's intentionally giving you leeway, because with a lack of standards and guidelines, which are going to take time, which the discussion has gotten us to this
point. But it's been 10 years since I've been on that side.
And complimenting.
But I haven't been working on it for 10 years.
I know you haven't. I'm saying the Planning Commission.
To get us to this point has been a fight of the years.
He has done more with them than anybody.
I will admit, an interim stopgap measure, but we have development projects that are coming in the door now that if you have nothing, you're going to get nothing.
Well, if we're up here doing our job, then they need to be doing theirs.
But what's complements and enhances? Can't that be interpreted any? That's really broad, right?
And again, you have to remember, if they go too far, and as they say, nitpick or do something bizarre, that's what the Board of Zoning Special Appeals is for.
Correct.
And quite frankly, if it hadn't been for the recession, this would have been a crisis years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They got a bond.
They did.
Right? And it wasn't planned. And quite frankly, I'm not sure how much the council members who were here at the time, including some that are still here, nobody was pushing for this. Nobody was, you know, raising the dickens about it. I know there was a little bit of a stir when I wrote them the letter saying, what's happening? I thought this was already being done. It's, you know, we're ready to go, and what I'm asking you is, do you think it's better, and I'm asking your professional opinion, do you think it's better that we do nothing until they can go through this whole process, adopt this, or amend this? What is the best to do? Because I don't know how long it's going to take to create the standards.
Nor do I.
I don't know.
It took the county a couple of years to do theirs.
Well, in a couple of years, there's going to be some stuff built around here.
Right. But, Dave, I don't want you to think we're fussing at you, because honestly, I go to a lot of planning and zoning meetings, and seriously, he has taken them farther with this than anybody.
My recommendation would be to adopt it so that you have
something.
And the key thing here is that the Planning Commission for at least 10 years has been doing this function and gotten lucky that no one challenged it. No national company or no developer said, I don't have to do that. People have cooperated with them when they have asked them. I haven't witnessed any nitpicking of items when they've asked. The most recent one that I was witness to as part of was the Twisters project. The first design of it, several members didn't care for. When they came back with this one that's going to get built shortly, they came back with a design change that goes with the area down the road from your building and more like the Union Station project.
But excuse me, Dave.
More traditional architecture, and they approved that.
The most important thing you said right then, was a few of them didn't care for it. That's not what planning and zoning is about.
Well, I understand that.
You know what I'm saying? Whether they personally care about it, like Dean said. They need a set of architectural commercial guidelines so that their personal opinion doesn't come in. It's right there in black and white.
Hallelujah. I'm going to say, I've been saying this for 10 years. It's been 10 years.
I agree.
Hallelujah.
But we do need to adopt something, because at least right now, we can at least with this loosely, we could hopefully use this, but
it's a bridge.
To get...
I don't know. I'm not sure, because I think that the thing is, we do not want this to be a long-term interim situation.
No. Nor do they. I must tell you, nor do they. Because they had lengthy discussions about it.
And let's say, I want them to be thoughtful. Yeah, I know we all want them to be thoughtful. We want them to be fair. But we also want them to be reasonably expedient.
Right.
Because the clock is ticking, and I'm praying that I'm not crying wolf here. When I think development, if development is going to happen in a rural community in this area, that it makes any difference at all, this is the community where it's going to happen. And nothing in the world is going to change that in the foreseeable future unless we start to build walls around this community.
50 and 130. Ivy, I don't mean to drag you this, but what did Sykesville do? Did they have architectural commercial guidelines?
Yes.
And how did they get to them?
It was actually a pamphlet. It was a very large pamphlet of historic district guidelines that was set into place many years ago.
Now, what about commercial?
Same thing.
They have commercial guidelines.
Oh, yeah, it's within the historic district.
Now, okay.
It's all commercial.
But did they hire someone, and how was that done?
It was actually done with the cooperation of NHG, Maryland Historic Trust.
And see, but then we do have historic trust. We have a historic district, and we have that district. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is all the areas that are going to be...
The commercial outside of our historic district.
Yeah, it's two different...
Because we're going to have to...
I guess in Sykesville they must have been the same. But we have a much bigger commercial area than the historic district.
But right, they had a very large historic district.
But did they hire, like, an outside person?
It was done way before my
way
time.
Before you? So what do you think we should do?
Did you want to...
You now know what's going on. You know everything we know. So we'll get this going. Now open the public hearing on the proposed ordinance 2014-07, an ordinance which basically is a change, an addition to the powers of the Planning Commission that states that they would then have discretion to have architectural design review. Planning Commission shall, as part of the site plan review process,
review and approve all proposed commercial development to ensure it complements and enhances the town's historic architectural character and uniqueness. That's exact words. So does anyone have any comments, suggestions, criticisms? Yes, sir.
I just sit here and listen to Mayor McKee. What has your attorney said about it as far as Dave, like you said, Mark Proppers here tonight, how does Dave Castle feel about it as far as what's been said?
Did you run this by him?
Oh, absolutely.
And what
yeah,
was
because
comments?
He created the ordinance.
Yeah, what was his comment?
And he has the same thoughts that you're subjecting, for now, the review to their opinion, not to specific guidelines. But if this would be protection for us, and we are going to be working on standards and guidelines. So that's how he advised me.
That's very good. I appreciate it.
So this is better than nothing.
Pretty much. Anyone, the gentleman that spoke or anybody else, have any questions or comments or suggestions or advice? Okay. Now close the hearing. Thank you. Thank you for your participation and questions, Dan.
Thank you, Dave, for getting it this far. This is the first thing in 10 years.
All right, so now it's up to the council. Do you wish to proceed or do you wish to not? What do you wish to do?
I think we all want to see the town develop in the fashion that is going to enhance and complement historic architecture. But at the same time, you've got somebody's opinion here to be developed. It depends what the makeup is of the planning commission to decide if it enhances it or it doesn't. I'm okay with it. I think I can work with this. The rubber is going to hit the road when you come to the actual design. Because you can drag something out, and I watched it happen on the La Hacienda.
Oh,
and
that was right
now. Not get built because too many different opinions got in the way, and finally. The economic conditions changed to the point and they let him drop.
They ran him right out of town, now he's over in Ocean Pines.
I'm okay with this as an interim
impact.
But it's
very weak.
More scary. And I'm okay with this too, but the standards we're calling for they need to be developed with haste. I don't want the standards drug out for a couple of years or two, three years and having nothing done. I think they're necessary, and if we're going to do this right, yes, this does fill a gap, but we need to work toward the standards. And it needs to be done expeditiously.
Absolutely.
I don't think you're going to run into anything different than what you've already experienced by adopting this design.
If I can make one comment, you know, it's been said to me by the planning commission members over and over, they are kind of in agreement. Somebody who was new to come to town to a commercial site to put up a store, put up a restaurant, we are the hot commodity now. If they want in, they will do what the Planning Commission suggests. That's their field. I think that they have a good consensus. It's a pretty diverse. They have, you know, an attorney. They have an architect. They have several different businessmen who spent their whole lives here. I think that they are capable of that. And I think they're capable of at least getting the groundwork done on the standards until we can, you know, fine-tune and not. They'd like to do it. They want to do it. It's just a matter of getting started this month. I think we can do it.
It wouldn't be tricky to do
it. I think we can do it quickly.
And you say the town's historic architectural character. Well, Cheers is historic. There's an architectural character there. So that's going to be an argument that's going to be used.
Yeah.
And that is, I think Hotel is one historic.
Right.
That's one of the things I have to address is
right.
The proximity and the nature of the neighborhood. And maybe, you know, it's,
it's like I said, it's not going to be easy, but it's not impossible either. I think the key thing is understanding that we want to have some standard, and we want it to complement the architectural
integrity
of the town. Let's face it, we have colonial, we have federal architecture, we have Victorian architecture, we have the architecture of prior to the Depression of the early 20s. You can find everything here, except hardly anything was built between 1930 and 1950. Other than that, we've got the full thing. So, but at the same time, like you said, I think you were alluding to the blue light. We don't want Miami Beach, what is that called?
Neon
retro 30s right. Looking stuff out on the highway either. I mean, come on,
But, Laura, seriously, if we did put this in the budget for the next fiscal year, and they started doing something now, looking for, RFPs, what it would cost to do that, do you honestly think that by the end of this year we could adopt some decent commercial guidelines? Do you think that's...
I think it's doable as long as the Planning Commission understands the Council's interest in,
Jesus going to have that from Jesus made well.
Well, I think the small town way to get things done is I'll go down to Cheers, and I know that'll be quite an effort, but I'll ask Denny to get Chris Denny if I can have a few minutes of his time, and we'll sit there and just kind of talk one-on-one about and do my best to convey everyone's interest. The concerns that Tom has, the concerns we have.
So you do that too, huh?
and I think that's the place to start, and then I'll ask you. Because, I think all of these people have the best
interest. They do.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it. And I do think that this is one of those tipping points where I think their intentions have been good, and we're just saying, let's go.
Hard because nobody kind of really doesn't want to take ownership of this because living here and professionally.
Let me just go ahead and make a motion.
Go ahead, Troy. Troy made the motion. This is the guidelines.
I think I can work with it.
Okay.
It's going to be tough.
Okay. We got faith in Troy.
We have a motion by Councilmember Purnell to accept the ordinance amending Article 5, Chapter 108, Section 274, Site Design Guidelines, as proposed by the Planning Commission. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. The record shows that the motion passed 3-1. And again, with Councilmember Cunningham being absent. And what I'll do is, if it's all right with you all, I'll go down and have a call with Chris and see what his advice is on this and get back with you. Of course, you say they're having their Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll try to.
It's on the agenda.
I'll try to get down there before Wednesday. That'll be good. Okay. I want to meet all my responsibilities. Okay. Next is number 7 on the agenda, Resolution 2015-01, a resolution adopting a public works mutual aid agreement.
I'll take that. Okay. Basically, what you have in front of you is a mutual aid agreement that codifies what the town is already doing when it comes to public works mutual aid. I had the town attorney, Dave Gaskell, review the document. He sees no issues with it. And I asked Jane to take a look at it. We also sent it to Mam Wong, the attorneys at Mam Wong, to take a look at it. The Federal Emergency Management Agency recommends this type of an agreement for municipalities to join together in disaster. And Merrill Municipal League sent it to us a little while ago and asked us to take a look at it. A number of cities, in fact, I think we might be on the tail end of that process have signed up for it. We're on the tail end a little bit because it took us some time to get through the legal review process that Jane submitted it to. But it doesn't do anything more
than what we would already do when it came to responding in a disaster. If another community needed assistance, we would come to their aid. What this does is essentially require us to do that, and also in case where we have a disaster or emergency, it obligates the other communities that have signed on to it to respond on our behalf and come to our aid.
Yeah, this was part of that HEPAC thing, that committee I was on. Remember what happened with that tornado and Mayor Moe?
Was that with LaPlata?
Yes, and it was like everybody just showed up, so they kind of decided we needed to do something to have memorandums of understanding, to be each other's, first responders. And we helped Chris Field. I know we sent guys down here with equipment and all.
Right. So it basically formalizes what you would already
It's been a long-standing tradition here, going back as long as anybody can remember. So we're just codifying a policy that...
Can I make a motion then?
Yes, Your Honor.
To approve Resolution 2015-01, Resolution adopting a Public Works Mutual Aid Agreement.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Hall to approve the adoption of the Public Works Mutual Aid Agreement. As proposed in the resolution 2015-01, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the motion passes 4-0. Okay, next we have our departmental reports, Finance Department, Larry Salute.
Good evening, everyone. I just want to give a quick follow-up on our financial system vendor selection process. We have visited Seaford, Delaware today. They have utilized Edmunds & Associates software, which was our first implementation and one of our vendors. They also have utility with electric, water, sewer, and electric, which is a little bit different from Maryland, but still it gave us a good overview of what the account looked like, and it seems like they're very happy they have been using the software, this particular vendor software, since 1990. And they've kind of grown as the software vendor grow. So Jane and Tim and Councilmember Dan Burrell and my group from Billing, Geneva, Michelle, and Melissa, and Laura as well, we've all been today and spent a good 2 hours, got some tips of what to look forward when we have our final selection.
Great.
At that point, we hope to have a phone conference on Wednesday with our GFOA representative to discuss our selection and our kind of like very down to the points plan where we're moving. From Wednesday, we'll be moving.
So do you expect to have a recommendation about when for the mayor?
I would say next council meeting.
Wow, that's great.
Depending on how quickly the contract negotiations go.
Okay. All right. So we're getting close.
Yes.
Thank you. That's very good news. Thank you. And Dean, thank you for all you've done so far and what you will be doing.
My privilege to participate in this process. It's been a very good process.
Thank you. Next is Deputy Town Administrator Mary Boland.
Good evening. It's just a quick reminder that there will be a Code Red all-call notification going out this Thursday at 2 p.m. The primary purpose of this particular notification is to inform people about the system, make sure everybody is aware of it, and also to test our local communication infrastructure to make sure that it can handle a call going out to every single contact within the system. In the case of an actual emergency, the test will be monitored by the vendor, and they will determine. Not that I anticipate any difficulties. We actually have already sent a couple of messages out to every contact point, but this is a test that they conduct as part of their contract.
Great.
How many people do you have signed up for?
It's hard to nail that number down because what you get when you look at the reports are the number of phone numbers, the number of email addresses. So it's kind of hard to get an idea of how many people that may address.
Do you have a rough figure on those?
I'm going to say, I want to say that the last number that I saw was that it was representing 1,200 different addresses. Okay. So that gives you a rough idea.
600.
Mary, maybe on the town electric bill or something? Because I had two different people that I guess don't have enough to do. But apparently there's different levels of the code red because they called me yelling, you know, I got to pay for this service.
No.
Well, there's different things. Weather reports, if you can go further with it. No, and that's what I called them back and said, no, you don't have to pay for anything. Now, if you sign up for the weather alerts and those types of things, then there's a cost. But the code red that we've adopted for the town, the level that you need, is at no cost to the rate.
Exactly.
Rate.
Thank you, Zach, pointing that out. That?
But if somebody asked you about that, it costs, if you sign up for their additional
services,
code red alerts, then there is a charge.
Yeah, it's sort of an upgrade to your personal preferences of what notifications you receive.
I think that's a good point to make, and again, maybe that needs to be reemphasized in the next community news, because we'll do it.
Right. This is something that we'll continue to push out. It's not, we're not going to stop reminding people about the system, because we always have people moving in and out and picking up the newsletter one month and maybe not another. So this is something that we'll keep putting out forever.
Yeah. And then as new people move in as well.
Merritt, have one change email address, for instance, that has been submitted.
If you had submitted it online, if the person had gone into the online and done it themselves, they should be able to go back in and make those changes. If they had done it by sending us one of the forms, they could just contact us and we can go in and make that change.
And just make a phone call then.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next is Water Resources and Public Works Director Jane Kreider.
Good evening. We're trying to keep up with the cold weather. We've had at least 10 phone calls, 6 of which were on Friday, of frozen pipes. It is early in the season, but I remind everybody to insulate and, if worst case, let that water drip a little bit to prevent your pipes from freezing. And water that's moving tends to not freeze as quickly. Normally, this is more like a February occurrence, so hopefully this is an indication of things to come. But again, I stress, you know, I urge everyone to be cognizant of the cold weather and insulating your foundations. Sometimes people have them open up in the summertime, and they may still have the crawl space opened up. Make sure those are closed. A reminder that this Wednesday is the final Christmas tree pickup for pick up for the trees.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for those tips. So next is Electric Utility Director Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'll just go down the list here. I'm sure everyone's noticed that we've removed all the decorations from the street light poles. The Christmas tree has been removed from the Atlantic Hotel, and the sign has been replaced. You will also notice that the tree lights are still on. We normally leave them on until time changes for daylight savings time, in case you get any calls about that, they're intentionally left on. Also, we assisted the Public Works Department with chipping up Christmas trees last Wednesday, and then I think we're scheduled to help them again this Wednesday. Also, we had a conference call with Garland, Texas, concerning a AMI smart grid system, one of the vendors that we're looking at. They've had it in place for some time, so we had a conference call with them.
Is that Arlington, Texas?
Garland, Texas. Garland, Texas, which they have about 70,000 customers, so they're very large. And they seem very happy with the type of system that they have. Also, we've been working on prepping the new transformer for the Atlantic Hotel. If you go around the backside of the hotel, you'll see a large green cabinet back there. That's an enclosed transclosure. It's one of the 7 that we have in town that is slated to replace. I've been in contact with the manager, a guy named Charlie, that works for John Fogler, and Henry, the maintenance guy over there, and then also the head chef at the kitchen. We talked about how we're going to do the change out. We're actually bringing in 2 generators, one to back up the hotel and the other one to back up the kitchen, because the downtime is going to be anywhere from 7 to 8 hours to do this job.
But the dual generators are basically
Yes, it's two. It's from the same source, but it's two separate services going to two different locations. So I got to have two separate generators, one for each one of them. Their downtime will be approximately an hour to hook up the generator and then an hour to disconnect it. If they're okay with that, they've suggested to do it around 9 o'clock at night after dinner is over with, and so it'll be like 9 o'clock till 3 or 4 in the morning. So we're working on that with them, just trying to pin down the date that we're actually going to do it. I've already got prices on the generators, which you'll see that in the PO's. They're in there. And also, we installed a new underground service to 233 Powell Circle. That's a new house that we built over there. And then also, the house that burned down on Branch Street, 117 Branch Street. If you've been by there lately, there's a new house that's been built there, and we installed a new service to that location also. And then also, one big project we've been working on is the new phone system, going from Verizon to Comcast. We finally have a schedule of the dates that that's going to occur. And, for example, the electric department, the wastewater department, that's going to occur on January 20th. Public Works and the Fire Plant is the 27th of January. The Visitor Center, Planning and Zoning is on February 3rd. Town Hall will be on February 10th, and the Police Department is on February 17th. Those are all tentative dates. We decided to start with the outlying buildings that weren't as crucial as Town Hall and the Police Department, just to knock those out of the way first and make sure if there's any bugs in the change out that we have it worked out before we get to Town Hall and the Police Department.
Great. That's excellent.
That's better.
Just to add to that, there will be no interruption in the phone services. As we install the new phones, we will still have our Verizon phones up and running until the very last moment.
So for the public, anybody trying to use any of the, or reach any of the town departments?
It will be no change whatsoever.
Great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, the way it's going to work is during the change-out, there's two different days. It's the date they install the new phone, and then they have a day, 2 days behind it where they port the numbers over from Verizon to Comcast. During that time frame, each phone stand will have two separate phones, the new one and the old phone. We'll be able to make phone calls out on the new phone, which will still receive calls on the old phone coming inwards until they port the numbers over 2 days later.
Now, you weren't here last time, Tim, but I wanted to tell you how seamlessly the power outage went and how smart it was to do it that way and, like, the way you're doing it with the hotel.
Yes.
Because PRMC Sunday or Saturday, what day was Ravens game? Saturday?
Saturday.
They were doing theirs all day, and all those patients in there couldn't watch the Ravens game because they had generators, but they had to have that, you know, for the equipment, not their TV. So the way you do it at night, where it's the least, you know, the disruption to people, they don't even know that their electric's off. That's the way to go.
Thank you.
That was terrible.
That makes us
crazy.
It was painful enough to watch as it was. Planning Director Nathan Gouard.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, I have nothing further.
Okay.
We covered enough ground.
Very good. You earned your pay today, don't worry about that. The next is Human Resources Director, Jeff Lee.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Well, you all can wonder. A number of things that are happening. It's year end. WDs will be out. I'm going to Outside Gamble by the end of the week. All kinds of friends this time of the year for me, insurance vendors, health insurance, liability insurance, workers' comp. I definitely do listen to those folks. I entertain for a number of reasons because, as you're well aware, most people are alike. And products may be the same in the end as far as coverage. But what I listen for, what is the product, what are your promises, and what's the price? And that always gives me a little bit of leverage. Companies that we have. So, and a lot of friends this time of year, and I we'll go on record again and share with the mayor and council. I have no idea for the upcoming FY what costs are going to be like as it relates to health care. But what I do know is right now it's a difficult time in January because we only have 6 months of exposure to the current year. And you won't find any insurance carrier that's going to even look at you until you have 9 to 10 months of exposure as far as getting you prices and all that. So I know this is the time of the year that some of you will call me or email me and say, how much? Well, I don't have an answer. And I'm not going to go on a limb this year and tell you I think this is going to happen because I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be an interesting year, I will say that.
Now, did they go by calendar year or fiscal?
Fiscal.
Well, it seems to me, what difference would it make if they went to a calendar year, you'd have the appropriate number of months, but so it wouldn't be such a last minute.
But we've been with a different carrier this year.
So we only have like 6 months.
We have 6 months of exposure with the current carrier.
Yeah, we went to Cigna.
Right. And they put a lot into that.
Okay.
I understand your logic and it's sound, but it's not Blue Cross and Cigna and UAC, they don't reciprocate.
Yeah, I'm sure.
When you lay that out on the table. Because it's, believe it or not, yeah, I could probably gather a lot of the information, but it's not going to be as exact as what you're going to get from that actual carrier. They're not going to release what they've got, bless you. They're not going to release it from that carrier. They base it off what you have now.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks.
Sounds like it'll keep you busy for a while. Very good. Thank you. Next is Economic and Community Development Director, Heidi Well.
Hello, good evening, everyone. I'll make this quick. The Berlin Main Street website, I am going to completely overhaul. I've been working tirelessly to try to find out the best option for the website, but that's going to be completely redone. It's going to look fabulous. And also, we're at the 10-year mark for the redesignation of our arts and entertainment district, so I'm working on that. I'm also meeting with Pamela Dunn from DBED next week in Annapolis to go over the application. And the event schedule is 99.9% finalized, with the exception of a few pending healthcare events that need to get added. And some other things. If you haven't stopped by the Welcome Center, we are calling the Visitor Center the Welcome Center. Now, if you haven't stopped by, take a look. It looks really amazing. Jim and I have been working on that. Jim Volk from the Berlin Building has got some great ideas. For February 13th, the Art Stroll is actually going to be an art and chocolate stroll. We have the majority of the shops and restaurants that are going to be included in that, and we're going to be doing a raffle, and so stay tuned for details on that. We're just getting started. And I'd also like to celebrate Black History Month at the Visitor Center for the month of February.
Excellent.
So I'm working with the Black community on that to find out history and working with some of the churches. So stay tuned for that also. A lot of things going on. And that's it.
That's good. Thank
I'm
you.
On vacation next week.
What? You just got here. What?
I didn't remember that she was even eligible for anything.
Ivy, if you need any information on the History Month, contact Commissioner Purnell.
Yes.
Well, I talked to Gabe, too, and he said that Barbara Purnell, Mr. Jesse told me that Barbara Purnell now is president of the Germantown Heritage, and she's got a lot of stuff, too.
Great, thank you.
And I've got that number.
They've all been great working with Berlin Hall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All these folks, they're all members of the family.
Yeah.
Forever.
So. She is her president this year.
You'll find them great to work with,
my brother.
Great. All right. Next is the town administrator's report.
Good evening. This is your purchase order list for tonight. We've got purchase order number 1617, the amount $1,139.50 to Mast Electrical Service for repairs to existing wire problems at Town Hall, noticed by the electrical inspector. Purchase order number 0625, the amount of $6,055 to Goody Hill Groundwork for emergency run, new water line 321 William Street, and purchase order number 1684 in the amount of $2,780 to Barnes Electric for rental expenses for two generators for the scheduled outage at the Atlantic Hotel. That concludes my report.
Does anyone have any questions for Laura regarding any one of the three purchase orders?
I'll make a motion.
Approve?
To approve.
All right. We have a motion to approve all three.
Biggie Hanging.
Yeah. The drama.
Sorry, it's going to be your
way. We have a motion to approve all three purchase orders by Councilman Gugliese. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Passes 4-0. I don't have any comments, but anyone on the council?
Yes, I have a comment. Water problem at my home. I think it was last week when that I had a delivery, and the delivery truck did something to the water line, and of course our water department came and facilitated the repair. But he also had to call on wastewater department and public works. And to see the collaboration and cooperation of those guys as they worked, it made me feel proud that I was a part of that organization. And I want to commend Jane for the splendid job she's doing with those departments. It was a seamless effort. In fact, the guys worked so fast and did such a timely and thorough job, they left before I could thank them.
It's taking more to catch up with you.
So, would you please express to the guys my sincere gratitude for the job that they've done?
I certainly will.
It was a good thing to see.
And he reminded me that it was 23 years ago before that when he had a water leak, and I was in the hole then.
Yeah. You're moving up. Yeah. Yeah. At least you're out of the hole.
That's what I mentioned.
That's what my son calls one of them white hats.
Who would know the show went down moving all up? Good.
Yeah.
Pastor Brown, did you have anything break down lately?
No.
Oh, good.
Good.
Okay. Is that it? Do we have any comments from the public? Do we have any comments or questions from the press?
Move to adjourn.
All right. Stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your attendance. Thank you.
Okay, please.